It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Hans Olsen, Scott Girard, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Enough of us talking. Let's actually get to somebody who knows what he's talking about. Somebody who dresses better than everybody else and is cooler than any other person on the planet. It's Ron Boone from the Jazz Broadcast, kind enough to join us. Booner, how are you?
Hey, guys. Yeah, I got a question real quickly here. That music that was just playing?
Yeah.
And since you guys think Ron Boone's so cool, so that... Scotty and Hans, were you like cool back when that record was out? Were you considered to be cool when that music was playing?
At no point in any of at least my life, I don't know about Hans. I mean, when Hans is playing in the NFL, the dude could fall out of bed and be considered cool when you're a professional athlete. But I can say this: at no point in my life has anybody said that dude's cool. That's never happened, Booner.
I'm sorry.
And I was wearing zoomies that had Warner Brother cartoon characters popping out of the pocket, and I had a half flat top, just redheaded half flat top. So I would say cool was far from it.
If that song been out that long,
it was bad, Booner. I was not cool at all, man. I know you were though.
Oh, absolutely. Although I can't remember that far back, I guarantee you, I thought I was anyway.
Oh, man. How many points had the three-point line been in college? How many points would you have averaged at Idaho State?
You know what? I was not a three-point shooter. I didn't take a lot of them. Even when we got into the, you know, deep into the ABA, I just... It's a shot that I could shoot it, but I didn't. It wasn't part of my arsenal to the point where I was going to take five or six the ball game. We did have a guy on our team named Glenn Combs who was flat out dead. I mean, he could flat out shoot the 3-point shot, but I was not a 3-point shooter. So all those attempts I have were from the 2-point range.
What former player that didn't have the opportunity to take advantage of the 3-point shot would be the best in modern day basketball?
I'm going to give you two guys here. One is the guy I just mentioned in Glenn Combs, who was he played with me with the Utah Stars. As a matter of fact, guys, we were teammates in Dallas, the Dallas Chaparrales. We came here to play the Utah Stars. We played the Utah Stars, and we changed locker rooms right after the ball game. Both of us came to the Utah Stars. We got traded here. But he was a great 3-point shooter, and he ended up tearing his knee up, got a rebound, pivoted to make an outlet pass, and that patella jumped to the side of his knee.
Oh,
from that point on, his career was gone. And then the other guy was Rick Mount out of Purdue. Those are two guys that were just flat out great 3-point shooters.
The great Ron Boone joins us right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. All right, so Booner, everybody, I don't want to say everybody, but a lot of Jazz fans are sitting back waiting for the Jazz to lose to the Celtics, try to improve the old odds with the lottery balls. And what do the Jazz do? They just find a way to get a W. Just how much fun has this season been for you to sit back and watch these kids that just don't know any better?
They just keep making it interesting, and they play hard. I mean, the margin of wins and losses are just a point or two. You just can't count them out. And some of the lineups that Will puts out there on the floor, you think, okay, where is the scoring coming from? And they find a way to stay in the ball game till marketing comes back in, and all of a sudden you got a ball game that the Jazz are going to have a chance to win. But to me, as a broadcaster, this has been fun, knowing that you know, there's picks involved and there's an opportunity involved here for, you know, for the Jazz to really improve their roster next year, and watching these guys continue to fight. So it's been fun.
So, Booner, as you know, I was a wrestler and a football player, so I love physicality. And one of my favorite aspects of a basketball game is a big man that goes after rebounds, but goes after rebounds like it's the end of it, end of the world. It's his last rebound. And last night, I saw Walker Kessler pull down a rebound, maybe 2 minutes left or so, second chance opportunity. He pulls it down in the middle of three Celtic players, throws some elbows, fires it back out to Lauri Markkanen, who knocks it down for three. And I thought to myself, that is a dog. That dude is a dog. What does it take? What kind of guts or what kind of player does it take to be able to fight through three guys, pull down a rebound, and fire it back out to the perimeter?
Okay, two things come to mind here. One is that he's gotten so much better at rebounding out of his area, meaning going and getting rebounds and not letting it come to him. And I know you guys don't get to the ball game early enough, but from the beginning of the season to this point here, Walker has three guys that are working with him before the ball game, finishing at the rim, pick and rolls, angles on screens, all of these kind of things. And they also have what I call maybe a beat-up session. Gets a rebound, and these guys are pounding on his butt like, you know, he's in a football game with you, you know. And to the point where he's taking care of the basketball, he's throwing his arms around, he's going up strong and trying to finish in at the rim. And that's the reward, I think, from myself and David, get a chance to watch them do that thing, do those things, and work out doing those things, and then see him implement it during the course of the basketball game. And I'm so glad you noticed that, because that's exactly what they're working on him, making him tougher around the basket there when he gets a rebound.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of times I think people think, especially with rebounding, because you look at some of the greats, that they just had the instinctual ability of knowing, seeing the trajectory, anticipating where the ball is going to go off the rim, and just having that, you know, part of their DNA and knowing how to snag rebounds. And I've always wondered how much you can coach that. I think he certainly has that in his DNA, but a lot of that still can be coached on how to rebound outside your area, correct?
Exactly. A lot of that is just natural for some guys, being able to rebound the basket, knowing where the ball's going to come off the rim and going and get it. Dennis Rodman was probably one of them, you know, and I'm sure there's a lot of them, but, you know, everyone's familiar with Dennis Rodman. I think Walker is getting there with those type of things. But, you know, that's a part of the game that they're trying to develop with him. Now, he's 7'1". So rebound has always been pretty easy for him because, for the most part, he's probably been the tallest guy on the floor, whoever he's playing against, and didn't have to go very far to get the rebound. He averaged, what, 8 rebounds in college? I think, yeah, 8 rebounds and 12 points a ball game. And he's much better at it now than he was when he was in college, strictly because of the tutoring that he's been getting here in the NBA. But, you know, there are guys that make a living rebounding, and they just be able to read that ball coming off the rim, and they have a tendency, a way of going to get it.
The second observation that jumped out to me last night, Ron, and outside of his sidestep three that he knocked down, it was a beautiful shot, and his confidence with the ball late in the game in clutch minutes, Ochai Agbaji and his vision and his passing last night really caught my eye. He had a couple of dishes that were gorgeous, on time, perfect rhythm, got his teammates right where they needed to be for a quick score. Talk to me a little bit about just Ochai's court vision, his ability to see the game, and how much he's improved and how much he can or needs to improve.
Well, we've seen how much he's improved from the beginning of the year. Now, we really don't know if it's that improvement or if it's being able to play the way he played in college. And this is what Will was telling us, is that he wants Walker to play and be as confident whatever he's doing out there on the floor like he was playing in college. Because when he first started getting playing time, you're playing out there, you don't want to make mistakes. And what he would do, he would run to that three-point line. He would run to that corner. That right corner three, it has been his friend all season long. He has taken 44 of his number of three-point shots have come from that right corner. That's where he would run, and he would wait for the offense to break down or whatever, and they'd feed him in the corner. He'd knock down a three-point shot. Now you're able to see him shooting off the dribble with three-point shots, which is awfully tough to do. You're seeing him drive to the basket. So Will is giving him the green light to play the way he's played in college, and now all of that comes along with being able to see the floor, read the defense, make the correct pass, you know, all those type of things. And you know, all of this, Hans and Scotty, is preparing you for next year. Just let the kid play.
Let him play.
Yep. What's the what is a realistic future for Talen Horton Tucker? Like what do you foresee him being if he continues on the path that he's on right now?
I'm still trying to read him. I like the idea of the boy. He can get to the basket. He's very creative when he gets to the basket. And we're strictly talking offense here. And he's able to get to the basket, but he shoots some low percentage shots a lot of times. And he's getting better at that. And he's another player that Will is having patience with because he's playing out of position at the point guard. He's never had to make those reads, and he's always been the one receiving, you know, that kind of passes and everything from a teammate. So, giving him some leeway of trying to learn a new position is something that, you know, I'm gonna have to just read and see where he's at and how long it's gonna take him to progress. Last year, he shot 27% from the three-point line. This year, I mean, his career was 27% before starting this season. He's getting a little bit better at that. Now that he's getting a lot of playing time and those open looks that he's getting from the three-point line, getting a chance to get his feet set and maybe shooting some threes. But I think the overall picture of him right now is that letting him play and a point guard position, something he's never had to play. Because you can see sometimes, you know, he's more offensive minded and not reading the defense and getting his teammates involved. Even though his assists and everything has gone up, but that goes along with his minutes have gone up there as well.
I'm Dave Cauley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ron, what is the thought process behind getting Rudy Gay on a court for 18 minutes a night? You know, Saturday night, he goes off and goes 3 of 5 from three and has 9 critical points. And really late in the game, too, when you really needed Rudy Gay from the outside, he hit some big shots. And I love that. But what are they trying to get out of him for 17, 18 minutes? Just what they're trying to get out of him?
Exactly. I mean, you have players out there you're trying to develop. You have players out there that's probably the future of this team. They need rest. You know, they can't play 35, 40 minutes a month. So Rudy Gay comes in, he steps in, and I noticed since Jordan Clarkson's been out that Rudy is starting to be more offensive-minded, starting to really assert himself, and, you know, for the most part, his minutes have gone up a few minutes there as well. You know, you're looking at a guy career-wise is a 35% three-point shooter, and averaged 16 points a ball game, had some great years, and you know, with the team that he played for. But you know, everybody's career gets to the point where you start to digress, and so the minutes that he's getting out there, valuable minutes, because he can get it going, but he's also giving, you know, some key guys some rest. And if you notice, Scotty, and sometimes he's playing the forward position, and when the Jazz go small, sometimes he put him at the center position there as well, just trying to stretch the floor.
So I thought it was funny you mentioned that there's three guys out there working with Walker Kessler, and it doesn't seem that long ago that the Jazz had Jerry, Phil, Gordy, and Kenny Natt, and that was about it. I mean, now you've got two or three coaches for each player out there. It's crazy how these staffs and these support guys have just expanded over the last, you know, 10, 15 years.
It really is, you know, and believe me, I've seen it all, you know. And getting back to the beating that they give Kessler, I mean, those aren't just forearms. These are some padded arms and stuff like that that they put on. I don't know if they have that stuff in football hands. But these sleeves they put on your arm that are kind of air foam like stuff, to where they can, you know, they're not hurting the player, but they're really beating up on them, just to, you know, to make them tough so you don't hurt him. But let's go back to my day, you know, when they had a coach, an assistant coach, and a trainer who was a traveling secretary there as well. Then you fast forward it to maybe Jerry Sloan's era, you know, as a coach, and you're looking at about three coaches, a traveling secretary, and a trainer at the same, you know, all together. And thanks to Mark Cuban, I think he was the first one that started these developmental coaches. And this is what you see today, where you got coaches that work with these young guys trying to develop them. They have a lot of money invested in these players. They want them to develop as fast as possible. And then for the most part, it's what we're seeing in Walter Kessler, as Hanson, you guys just brought up. He's trying to develop the guys in an area where you need them the most, and where they need to be improved, where they need to improve the most. And so this is where those developmental coaches come in. And you can thank Mark Cuban for that. Now the travel squad is huge compared to the travel squad we had back in the day.
So you mentioned Jordan Clarkson being out for a time. I'm curious your thoughts on Colin Sexton, who's now missed 10 games. He hasn't been on the court since, I believe it was the middle of February, the last time he was on the court. So is his hamstring okay? Is this a strategic move? And just your thoughts on Colin Sexton's future with the Utah Jazz.
Well, his future is great with the Jazz, I'm sure. Just trying to make sure this hamstring is ready to go. Now, whether or not he's able to get a few games in before the season's over, you know, we have to wait and see. I've watched him in practice, well, in shoot-arounds anyway, shooting the ball, doing those conditioning drills that they work on, you know, with him. So that point guard position, the Jazz need him. You know, they probably like to have him back out there on the floor, but I think they're going to be careful with him. I've never had a hamstring pull. I don't know if you have hands. I do know that they can be very painful, and you can reoccur. I mean, you could re-pull something like that if you're come back too early. Linemen don't get hamstring pulls, do they?
It takes an athlete. It takes somebody that has a hamstring to get a hamstring pull. Oh, okay. Booner and I've never had one of those.
I'm so sorry.
Never had enough hamstring to pull in the first place. Eh?
Hey, as a former player and a guy that's been around the league for as long as you have, what's really, I don't want to say surprised you, but what's really jumped out at you as you watched Will Hardy in his development as a coach in year one?
You know, patience. Tremendous amount of patience. And then, you know, we get to, David and I, sometimes we get a chance to talk to him, you know, quite a bit. And then his knowledge of, you know, what he's saying and how he, you know, we can be having a conversation with him, and all of a sudden a light goes on in my head that, dang, I didn't realize that, you know, that type of thing. But his knowledge of the game at such a young age, and the direction I think that he wants certain players to go to go with, you know, while he's coaching this team, it's great. And I think the patience is probably – the big thing here that I'm seeing. He knows that he has a young team. He knows this team was not built to tear the league up this year. And looking at the future, I think that it looks good. And I think he looks good as a head coach.
Bruno, I was going to do a health and welfare check on you, make sure you're okay through all this snow that we've had. Are you doing okay? I know you got to get out on a course soon. Are you able to get out on any courses while you're on the road at all?
You know, I did have one time to, where I didn't have to take some Excedrin every day just because I couldn't play golf. And that was our last trip to Orlando. We stayed at one of those hotels, that have golf courses right there.
Oh, yeah.
And so you look out your patio and your window there, and you're looking at, dang, look at that fence. Ooh, that's a tree. Oh, but this golf course got a lot of water. So you know what I did, Hans? I went and rented the club, so I played 18 holes.
That's my guy.
Hey, I saw you hopped on Twitter. Were you at the Utah game yesterday?
Absolutely, watching those girls play. And let me tell you guys those girls are physical, man. If they were in the NBA, there would have been 100 fouls called out there last night. But boy, the women's game is called entirely different than what you see in the NBA. I really enjoyed watching those ladies play last night. Now, I watched some of them on TV. I don't know any players' names or anything, but if I'm doing things like if I'm prepping here for a game or something, and I got, I can watch the games. But being that close and seeing how physical, those girls bang each other. And the whistle's not blown. But I really enjoyed the ball game last night.
I'm glad you said it that way. I actually started out the show talking about that Alyssa Peely and what Princeton was doing. They said, we just got to take this girl out. They put three girls on her. They were throwing elbows, beating up her arms, hanging around her neck. Nobody would blow a whistle, but then one of the Princeton girls would get touched, and you put them at the line almost every time. It is called so much different. They really do let them get after it, though.
They really do, and the system that the coach was using up there really played to her strength, because she is a flat-out banger around the basket, drives to the basket. You can't move her, and then she steps out, and she knocks down a three-point shot, and I thought, oh, my goodness, like I said, I really enjoyed the game, and I sit next to a couple of ladies that were just flat-out, man, I just love them. They're sisters. And they surprised the hell out of me because they knew basketball. Every time a substitution was made, they were telling me what was going on. And then the one lady said this. She talked about Princeton, and she went back to Pete Carroll days, back with Princeton where they would pass it 100 times.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, back door, she went back to that and started talking about that stuff. Now, it's pissed me the fact. Now, she had to be my age in order to know those things. And so the ladies were in their late 70s, and they just knew basketball. It was really great just sitting next to them and watching the ball game.
They invited Booner, we appreciate
the elevator. They invited me to take the elevator up to the second floor with them, so I wouldn't have to climb those steep steps. The University of Utah
arena,
I think you ought to get put a group together of Scott and Hanson and get a new arena up there.
We'll get on it.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
Hans got that NFL money.
Yeah, the first thing I could think of to do with any of that NFL money is build a new arena
for Utah. <Yeah. laughs>
I'm going up to Idaho first, Booner. You and I will take our cash. We'll go up to Idaho.
Let's go to Pocatello.
Yeah.
Get that mini dome fixed up.
Hey, it's always Booner. A pleasure, guys, and I'm glad you got to talk to me today.
Yeah, we are too.
We do too.
It's always our favorite time of the week, for sure.
Okay, Booner, you're the best. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Booner.
All right, guys. I'll see you.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.